All right, so we'll say good morning. Let's begin. So we have a lot to do today. A beautiful daf of Gemara. So today's daf is Ksuvas Ayin Beis. We are beginning last line of Ayin Aleph Amud Beis. So says the Gemara, Hamad Yos Ishto. So remember again, the case over here was a man makes a neder, preventing his wife from going to the Beis Hamishta, from going to a house of celebration, or to a house of mourning. Says the Gemara, Bishlama Lebeis HaMishta. So let's remember again, the common denominator in all these cases in the Mishnah is that Lamaisa, if he makes this neder, so the Mishnah ruled, Yotzi V'itin Ksuva. He has to go ahead and divorce her and give her Ksuva. So says the Gemara, Bishlama Lebeis HaMishta. I understand why if he prohibits her from going ahead and attending a Beis HaMishta party, social gatherings. So I understand we have to divorce her and give her top of Ayin Beis, because Ika Noel Befaneha. Well, so now this is very interesting. He says, because he closes the door in front of her. Now look at Rashi, Ika Noel Befaneha, Deles Shal Simcha Upikuach Tsar. So we'll say this is amazing. See, he goes in and he closes in front of her, the door of Simcha, and Pikuach Tsar. Now we'll say Pikuach Tsar means that what Rashi explains is that part of the beauty of attending a simcha is that a person goes ahead and forgets their troubles a little bit. Everybody needs a little bit of an escape at some point in time. So people find escapes, healthy escapes, in all kinds of ways. One of the ways people do it is through social gatherings, through simchas. So to deprive someone of that little escape from sometimes the difficulties or challenges of life is seen as simply inappropriate. But what's the big deal if he prevents it from going to the Shiva? Homer Bo says it's very profound. Tana lemachar himesa, ve'in kol bria sopta. Because what's going to happen? If she never attends a Beis Avel, tomorrow if she dies, no one's going to eulogize her. Ve'ika de'amri in kol bria sofna. Or others say no one's going to bury her. Tanya, hayu Rabbi Meir Omer, what does it mean when Shlomo Amalek says that it's better to go to a house of mourning than it is to go to a house of celebration? For this is the end of all man, and the living will take it to heart. What does it mean the living will take it to heart? It means that the living will take matters of death to heart. So I will say, of course, on one hand, it means that a person will contemplate their own mortality. But on the other hand, says the Gemara, Disapeid yispedune. Rabbi says, if you eulogize other people, people will eulogize you. Dikavar yikperune. If you participate in the kvura of others, people will bury you when it's your time. Diyodel yidlune. If you cry for others, others will cry for you. Dilavai yilavune. If you accompany the mace for others, so ultimately, again, others will accompany your body after 120. Diton yitanune. If you help to carry the aron of the deceased, others will help to carry your aron. I'm going to say a very profound yisod, that ultimately, if you want others to be there for you in life and in death, you must be the kind of person that is there for others. But if you're not there for others, if you don't put yourself out, then don't expect others to put themselves out for you. Therefore, says the Gemara something amazing, that if he prohibits her from going to the Beis Avel, then ultimately, if she's not the Baal HaSchesed, if she's not a person who's ultimately there for people in their times of need, then what? Then she has to be concerned that no one's going to be there for her in her time of need, after 120. Therefore, if a husband makes such a neder like this, it would be grounds for immediate divorce and payment of the ksuva. So the Gemara goes, V'ayitrim haya toin mishun davar acher rashai. But yet the Mishnah said that if the husband says, I don't want you going to the house of celebration, to the base Mishnah, to the base Avel, mishum davar acher, because of another matter, then he's permitted to say that. The Gemara says, my davar acher, what does this mean, davar acher? Am Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, mishum b'nei adam perutzin shematzuyin sham. Because he says there are some immoral people that are there. So he says because there are immoral people either at the Beis Mishta or at the Beis Avel. So a man is entitled to tell his wife, I don't want you going to this place because it's not the right group of people there. So the Gemara says, Amar Lashilo, Amar Eladis Chazik. That's only true if it's true, meaning if there are actually immoral people there. Avalo is Chazik lo kol kamini. But I will say, if he says, well, I'm concerned that there may be immoral people there, that's not enough of a reason to prevent his wife from going to these places. In Mamish, he has to have clear proof that there really are immoral individuals who are frequenting these places, and therefore, again, he does not feel it's a good idea for his wife to go there. Vim amarla amanash shatomri. So I'll say, remember again, the Mishnah said that if he says to her, if he says to her that she has to go ahead and tell Ploni, tell so-and-so, what he said to her, what the husband said to the wife, or what the wife said to the husband. So what did the Mishnah say? So the Mishnah said, I'm an Asher Tomi Leploni, Masha Amart Li, O Masha Amart Ilach, O Shetimala, Yotzi Vitin Ksuva. Yes, the Rasin give her Ksuva. So Gemara says, I don't understand Vitema. What does it matter? Meaning, let her just say to Ploni whatever it is that her husband wants him to say. I'm Rav Yudam Shmuel, Dvarim Shal Kalon. Literally, it's matters of degradation. So we'll say, so matters of degradation could be in a couple of different ways. Matters of degradation could be that husband said something disparaging about Ploni to his wife, and now he wants the wife to relate to Ploni the disparaging comments that husband made about him. So of course, that's not a good position to put the wife in. Or the other possibility is Dvarim Shal Kalon could mean certain intimate matters that husband spoke about with his wife, that for some reason he wants wife to convey to someone else. So such a situation like that, again, is certainly not fair to the wife. And therefore, if that's the way the husband is going, bless you, the way the husband is going to go ahead and conduct this marriage, it's grounds for immediate divorce and payment of the ksuva. Oshe timamalo ma'ar la'ashpa. So remember again, or if he tells her that she has to literally fill up and then pour out into the garbage dump. So also grounds for immediate divorce and payment to the ksuva. So I know it sounds silly, but why not do it? What's the big deal if she, well, I don't know, if she fills up the bucket and pours it out into the garbage dump? Looks a little silly, but what is the big, let her just do it. So first of all, so Rav Yehuda said to Shmuel that this is euphemistic. Shetamali v'no fetzes is he's telling her that he doesn't want her to become pregnant, so that after they have relations, he wants her literally to remove the zera, to remove the semen from her body. Rashi says, so we've seen this before, that in the times of the Gemara, they had certain contraceptive measures that would have a woman go ahead and thrash her legs after Bia or stand up after Bia. The idea over here is that this is euphemistic for after you are filled up with the zera, I want you to empty out. So he's telling her, I don't want you to get pregnant. So the Gemara, and again, so a husband says this to his wife. This would be grounds for immediate divorce, ultimately, and payment of the ksuva. The masni satana. So in the Braisa, they have a different version. Shetamali asara kadema, invitar al ashpa. No, that literally it means he's telling her, I want you to fill up 10 buckets of water and pour it out into the garbage dump. So bishlama l'shmuel mishumach yotzi v'itin ksuva. So I understand, according to Shmuel, well, if a husband says to his wife, I don't want you to become pregnant, why this is grounds for divorce and payment to the ksuva? Well, remember, we had this before. Because even though a woman is not mechuyaves in peri avarivya, right, the obligation of procreation is not on, but remember we said, first of all, there's natural maternal instinct. Second of all, remember on a utilitarian level, the woman said, I want to have someone to help me in my old age. If he is going to prevent her from having that, then lemaisa again, that is grounds for divorce and payment of the ksuva. But according to the Braisa, that he's actually telling her to fill up buckets of water and to pour it out, what's the big deal? Just let her do it. It looks a little bit crazy, but why not? Because as she does this, people are going to think that she's a deranged person. And obviously, developing a reputation as a shota is not good. This is very interesting. If a man makes a neder prohibiting his wife from borrowing and from lending, nafa kavra v'rechayim. So we'll say this is a sifter, a sieve, and a handmill, v'tanur, or a small oven, yotzi v'yitin ksuva. These are grounds for divorce and payment of the ksuva. Why? Shemasiya shemra b'shchonosa. We'll say, listen to this, because he's going to give her a bad name among her neighbors. That if she, and we'll say, now what's interesting about this is the following, that this is shlo tisha v'lo tashio, that this is the idea over here, that I understand if he prevents her from lending. But interestingly enough, this is even if he prevents her from borrowing. Why? Because apparently the Gemara feels that part of establishing neighborly relations with people is not just giving to them, but what? But borrowing from them as well. Very interesting. So if he makes a neder prohibiting her from going ahead and lending and borrowing basic household items, that's grounds for immediate divorce with payment of the ksuva, because he's going to make her look like a bad person in the eyes of the neighbor. Tanya Achir Bais that supports this. Hamadiris ishto shlo tish avlo shlo tashil. If a man makes a neder preventing his wife from borrowing and from lending. Nafa kava v'rechaim v'tanur, the sieve, the sifter, the handmill, and the small oven. Yotzi v'itin ksuva, he has to divorce her and give her a ksuva, mipnei masiya shen rabishkinosel, because he gives her a bad name among her neighbors. V'chein hi, shenadra shalotisha v'shalotasha, nafa v'kava v'rechaim v'tanur, v'shalotia ari begadim nam lebinav. Similarly, if she takes a neder, saying that she will not lend, or she will not borrow the sifter, the sieve, the handmill, and the oven, or she takes an edict that she will not weave nice clothing for his sons. What's talocha teitzah and abo say? That obviously means the kids are going to go out not nicely dressed. And very important, very, you know, if the children are not appropriately dressed, the poor reflection on the family. So the Gemara says, teitzah shelo b'ksuva. Ultimately, this is grounds for divorce without a ksuva. Why? Because ultimately, again, it gives her a bad name among her neighbors, and obviously it's not good for her and not appropriate for her husband as well. Says the Mishnah, we'll say, now we're getting into a very interesting sugya, which is breaches of proper halachic behavior that are grounds for divorce. The ilu yotzos shalobik suva. Now, we'll say, remember, up until now, we've been talking about situations, specifically in the nedarim situations, where, again, there is, because of the reality that the neder creates, therefore, again, it calls for a dissolution of the marriage with payment of the ksuva. The following is a list of breaches and appropriate behavior which warrant divorce and the forfeiture of the ksuva. So listen,
with or without a nedar?
I'm sorry? This is not nedarim at all. You're going to see, this is behaviors. This is behaviors now. The ilu yotzo shelo b'ksuva. These are the women who go out without a ksuva. Listen to this, Rabosai. Ha'overes al das Moshe. If a woman goes ahead and violates das Moshe, now Rabosai, now we're going to keep in mind these terms. Das Moshe means biblical law, Torah law. Right? A woman violates halacha, so that's grounds for immediate divorce. And we'll see exactly what this means. And no ksuva. Vi Yehudis and das Yehudis. So we'll say das Yehudis, look at Rashi. Shenagu b'nos Yisrael v'afagav d'lo ksiva. Das Yehudis, Rabosai, refers to generally accepted Judaic behaviors that are not da'araisas, but are, we'll call, normative behaviors. Normative halachic or normative Jewish practices. So ve'izihi das Moshe. So what's an example of a woman who violates das Moshe? Machilas hashen amoser. She gives him untithed food. She gives him untithed food. U'mishamashto nida. Or she has relations with him when she's a nida, without telling him. V'lo kotzala chala, or she doesn't separate out chala from his food. V'no deres ve'ina mekayemes, or she makes nedarim, and she does not uphold her nedarim. V'ezohid, so we'll say, these are all examples of where she is violating biblical law. Violating biblical law. What's das Yehudis, we'll say? Now listen, this is very important. What does it mean if she violates das Yehudis? Yotza v'rosha parua. She goes out with uncovered hair. So uncovered hair, says the Gemara, is a violation of Das Yehudis. Now we're gonna get in. This brings up a whole bunch of very interesting halachic discussions as well. So what we're gonna, obviously, as you know, Kidarko, the Mishnah only gives you general kind of principles, then the Gemara has to flesh them out a little bit. Someone goes out with uncovered hair. V'tava b'shuk, or she goes ahead and she weaves in the marketplace. Umidabares im kol adam, or she speaks with every single man. Abba Sholom, or Abba Shol says, Af ha-mikoleles yoldav befanav. This is an interesting one. If she curses her husband's parents in his presence, she doesn't like her in-laws, and she's vocal about it. She curses his parents in his presence. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, Af ha-kolonis. A woman, so to a woman who is very loud. We'll discuss again what that means. Ve'ezuhi kolonis, who is a woman who is very loud. L'chishehi medaberes besoch besa, when she's talking in her house. U'shcheineha shomin kola. And the neighbors hear her. So we'll say, so again, so here's, you already see, by the way, the difference between Das Moshe and Das Yehudis. Das Moshe is going to be biblical law. Das Yehudis seems to be certain elements of tznius. That if there is a violation of certain elements of tznius, ultimately, again, that is grounds for dissolution of marriage without a ksuva. Says the Gemara. So now the Gemara is going to go through each of these cases one by one. Ma'achilas hosheinu mu'usr. So we'll say, remember, again, one of the cases is where she's feeding him food, and it's not properly tithed. So the Gemara says, hey, chidami, what's the case here? I diyada, if he knows that it's not tithed, nifrosh, then he shouldn't eat it. I the lo yada, and if he doesn't know, then mina yada, then how does he know? Meanwhile, what the Gemara is asking over here is, how exactly does a guy know, how does he know if his wife is not tithing the food? Mini marshach, If you know she's not tithing, you shouldn't need it. And if you know, and if he doesn't know that she's not tithing, then he doesn't know that she's not tithing. So which means lotzicha da amrale ploni kohen tikin liasakri. So what happens? She says, "Listen, Aaron Cohen. He went ahead and he was so nice. He came over. He tithed the produce. It was so nice of him." Va'azel shara. Then what happens? When the husband sees Aaron Cohen, he says, "Aaron, thank you so much for coming by and tithing the produce." And Aaron says, "What are you talking about? V'ishtachach shikra." And turns out that she lied. So she lied about the fact that the food was tied. That's how he finds out. And she has relations with him when he is in Nida. When she is in Nida. Again, what's the case? If he knows she's in Nida, so he has to separate from her. But also remember, again, it's very important. If Lemais, again, he does not know, then a man relies on his wife to tell him what her status is. How do we know that a nida counts to herself? Now, what does this mean? So 7 clean days. How do we know that lamaisa, again, the truth is, it actually is a 7 clean days. So how do we know that when a woman's counting shivanakim, she counts for herself? Meaning, there is no obligation for her to count publicly, but a count, bein atzma, is enough. Because the pasuk says, v'safra la shivas yamim, la liatzma. Because the pasuk says that she will go ahead and she will count for herself. Safra la shivas yamim. She will count for herself 7 days. La laatzma, for herself, meaning she's able to count for herself, and there is no need for her to make that count public to anyone else. Also, just interestingly enough, in Tosfos the safra la liatzma, Tosfos asks the kasha, why doesn't the woman make a bracha on counting shivanakim? In the same way, Intrative Tosfos says that we make a bracha on Sfiras HaOmer. So fascinating. The same way that, again, because both are counting the passage of time, so why not go ahead and halacha lemaisa count for Shivanakim as well? To which Tosfos says something very interesting, because by Shivanakim there's the possibility that what? That her count may be overturned. Remember, again, if she bleeds again during the 7 clean days and lemaisa that destroys them, she has to start again. Therefore, to make a bracha on accounting that may not endure, says Tosis, was not an appropriate counting. So what's the case over here? So what happened? She says, meaning she says, I had a show of blood. I showed it to the Rav, to Talmid Chacham, and he said it was Tahar. And what happened? And the husband ran into the Rav and told him, thank you for answering the Shaila. And it turned out that she lied, that she never asked anyone about it, and therefore it turns out that while he thought his wife was Tahura, she in fact was in Nida. V'baistim, the other possibility is, that if a woman had a chazaka being a Nida amongst her neighbors, and also what that means is, remember, times of the Gemara, women wore different clothing during their days when she was in Nida. So that's if she had a chazaka that she was in Nida based on the clothing that she was wearing, then even if she did not go ahead and explicitly tell her husband that she's a Nida, Lemaisa, if he had relations with her, he gets malchus because he should have known better. And what happens? She doesn't separate chala. Again, what's the case? If he knows that she's not separating chala, nifrosh, don't eat the bread. But if he doesn't know, then how does he know? Same thing about say. She says that the kneader, the baker, separated out dough from the challah. The azul shaylei, and the husband went and he thanked the kneader, or he went to ask him. Shikra, and it turned out that she was lying. And Abosai, if she makes nedarim and she does not uphold them, then ultimately, again, this is grounds for divorce and no ksuba. Why? Da'amar Mar, Ba'avon and Darim Bani Mason. We'll say very serious Kimara, because Mar says, in the as a result of the sin of making Nidarim and not upholding them, children die. Rashi says, Bani Mason, so again, without getting into the deeper meaning of all this, but Nidarim represents some type of future aspiration. Person makes an eder and does not uphold it, so they lose, the Gemara says, the person loses their children, who also represent the potential fulfillment of future aspirations. Do not allow your mouth to go ahead, to cause your flesh to sin. And now the end of that pasuk is, the end of that pasuk is, you will destroy the handiwork of your hand. So the Gemara says, "Ve'ezehin ma'aseh yadav sha'adam." What is the handiwork? What's the handiwork of man's hand? Havi omre banav ubenosav. It refers to one's children. Rav Nachman Ar Mehacha. Rav Nachman said from here, "Lashavi kisyes b'nechem." For literally for nothing, I have killed your children. So lashav al iske shav. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, "What does it mean lashav? For matters of shav, for matters of unfulfilled oaths and vows." Kadosh Baruch Hu will take children. Tanya, Hayy Rabbi Meir Omer, Kol Yodea Be'ishto Shana Daris Ve'ina Mekayemes. Rav Osei, any person who knows that his wife makes nedarim and does not uphold them, what should he do? Yachzer B'yedirena. He should go ahead and make her take another neder. Yedirena, B'may Metakila. Why do you want her to take another neder? Eli Yachzer V'yaknita K'dei Shetidar B'fanav V'yaferla. Rav Osei is very interesting. Rather, what should he do? He should provoke her. I will say, generally, nidarim are often made in times of anger. So what should he do? He should provoke her. Stand far away when you do this. Right? He should provoke her, and she'll make nidarim. But she'll make nidarim in his presence, and what will he do? He will quietly annul those nidarim. So she thinks that she's made the neder, but in reality, he has annulled them. Therefore, if it turns out that he does not go ahead and fulfill them, no harm will come as a result. We'll also listen to this. Amrulo, so they said to Rabbi Meir, Ein Adam Dar Im Nachash Bikfifa. Well, it's a very profound Gemara. So they said to Rabbi Meir, it's a nice idea, but a person can't live with a snake in a basket. And I will say now, it's a very good phrase, actually, because what does that mean? Even if a person says to the snake, listen, snake, you stay on that side, I'll stay on this side, and we'll have plenty of shalom. The nature of the snake is you agitate it a little bit and suddenly again it's going to strike. So Rabbi says it's a very profound yisod. So Rabbi Meir is saying, if she has a problem, so kind of just try it. Rabbi says it's actually a very interesting yisod in just marital conflict resolution. Rabbi Meir is saying, if there's a problem with the marriage, so can you know, just find a way to kind of sidestep it. Just, you know, provoke her, make her take a neder, and just annul the neder quietly. You know, whatever, it'll be okay. The Chum say, not going to work. If there's a problem, you might buy yourself a little bit of shalom for a little bit of time, but you can't live with a snake in a basket. You can't live life with a ticking time bomb that you know just a matter of time until it's going to go off. Bless you. Similarly, if a man knows that his wife doesn't separate achala, not a big deal. Rabbi Huda says, just, you know, go separate it afterwards, right? So she didn't do it. Remember again, Rabbi, so you can separate challah even after a fully finished loaf as well, from a fully finished loaf. So it's okay, she didn't do it, not a problem. Just go and separate it when she's finished. Amrulo ein adam dar nachav shpik fifa. So he said to him, again, a sinuchum say, you can't do that. If there's a problem that she's not separating challah, for you to go ahead and clean it up after her is not addressing the problem. Can't live with a snake in the basket. Man de masni laha kol shkin ahach. So we'll say the one who said it on this case will certainly say on the other case. Aval man de masni ahach, aval ha zimnan de mikri ve'achel. So we'll say, you know, in the case of nedarim, it's a little bit easier to handle. Why? Because lemaisa, again, the person's not making nedarim all of the time. So okay, it's a little bit more infrequent. Perhaps this itza of provoking her, getting her to make the neder, and then annulling it quietly could work. But if there's an issue with the Afrasha's Chalabar, for whatever reason, she just doesn't want to do this, we'll say that bread is a staple in the home. This is an ongoing issue. And unless, of course, you address the core issue as to why there exactly is this problem, inevitably you're going to end up eating from bread that did not have the challah taken from it. Therefore, again, the Chachamim seem to constantly take the same approach of Ein Adam Dar Im Nachash Bikfifa Achas. You have to address the issues head on. You can't live with a snake in a basket because it's only a matter of time until you get bitten. Ezu Das Yudis Yotzev Rosh Purah. So now we get into a very interesting sugya. So what's an example of a woman who violates Das Yehudis? Now let's remember again. So Das Yehudis, said the Mishnah, is not a case of where is biblical law, but rather, again, seems to be accepted normative tznius practice, modesty practices. So what's an example of a woman who violates modesty practices? She goes out with an uncovered head. Rosha parua, what do you mean uncovered head? Doraisi. Rosh says it's a biblical obligation for a woman to cover her hair. Dichsiv, because the pasuk says, upara es roshesh. Now, here's what's interesting, is that the source for a biblical obligation or for a woman covering her hair comes from Isha Sota. Comes from the situation, ultimately, again, the woman who is suspected of adultery. So the Torah says, the first thing we do to her, that the Beis Din does to her, when they bring her into the Beis Din, to the Beis HaMikdash, actually, the Kohen, upara es rosh ha'isha. They go ahead and they uncover her hair, which also indicates to us what? That a married woman has covered hair. V'tanu d'bei Rabbi Shmuel, And in the Yeshiva Rabbi Shmuel they taught, Ashar Lebenos Yisrael, Shelo Yotsu Beparo Rosh. From here we see that this is the halacha, that Jewish women cannot go out with uncovered hair, to which the Gemara says, oh, but I'll make the following distinction. Da'oraisa, Amadeis, Da'oraisa, Kalsu Shapir Dami. So I'll say, interestingly enough, Midaraisa, now the great Gemara is going to make a distinction, is between, yes, so now we've established is there is absolutely a biblical obligation for a woman to cover her hair. The interesting question will be, how much hair is she obligated to cover biblically? So Da'oraisa, Kalsu Shapir. So I'll say, Midaraisa, if she wears her basket on her head, that's enough. If you look at Rashi, Kalsa, Sal Shiyeshla Milamata Beis Kibul, La Homlo Berosho, Beis Kibul Milamala, La Seisbal Plachu Pishna. So, what is interesting? So, women used to wear baskets on their head where the top of it, the top of the basket was like a receptacle where they used to put stuff in it, and the bottom was like worn on it. So, in other words, the Midarais, what the Gemara seems to be saying over here, is that even the basket that just covers her hair is enough. Now, we'll say, what's interesting to note about this is the Shaila is, what is the Gemara really saying? Is it saying that, therefore, Midda'oraisa, it's enough if it just covers the top of her hair, but for example, again, if her hair hangs out of it, that's fine. Or what the Rush brings down and others is that, no, what it's saying over here is the basket often had like, like spaces in between it. So that even when she wore the basket on her head, you were able to see little pieces of, or little parts of her hair in between the slits of the basket, but that all the hair was tucked in to the basket. So I must say, obviously, we're not going to be able to do justice to this discussion halachically, you know, in a daf yomi shir, but it's just interesting machlokes aposkim. In any event, what the Gemara is saying over here is that midda oraisa, it appears that a woman covers her hair, but would not have to cover all of her hair. However, das yehudis, afilu kal sanami aser. I will say what das yehudis says is that what? Is that lemaisa, again, that the basket is not enough, and that a woman must cover more of her hair. Now, we'll say, now, how much hair she has to cover, we'll actually get into this, you know, because, again, remember, there's the notion of tefach bi'isha erva, that a woman is permitted to leave at least a tefach of her hair uncovered. But what appears to be unfolding over here is that lemaisa, mid d'oraisa, she has to cover her hair. That's an unequivocal truth, right? The Gemara is not arguing on that point. Mid d'oraisa, there's the obligation. But lemaisa, mid d'oraisa, perhaps, she could cover some amount of her hair. Das Yehudis comes in and says she needs to cover more of her hair. So therefore, again, so the point over the Gemara is making is Amar Vasi, Amar Rav Yochanan, Kal Sa'in Ba Mishum Paru Arosh. So Vasi says, to be clear, that's the Gemara means over here. See, even though the Gemara is putting hair covering under the category of Das Yehudis and not Das Moshe, even though, again, hair covering is Das Moshe, it's biblical, but the Mishnah is referring to the fact that here she's not covering as much hair as she should be. So that's called ground, that's called in violation of Das Moshe, of Das Yehudis, and therefore the Mishnah says that's grounds for divorce without a ksuva. So Amar Abasi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kalsa in Bamishun Peru Arosh. So Abasi said in Rabbi Yochanan, that if she just walks around with a basket on her head, so she is not, that's not to be considered as if she's walking around with an uncovered head. Havi Barab Zera Hechil. What's the case? I mean, Rabbi Yochanan says that if she wears her basket, that's enough. She's not considered to have uncovered hair. So where? Like, where exactly she's wearing the basket? Ilema b'shuk. If you want to say all she's wearing is the basket in the marketplace, that can't be, because das yehudis. Because I must remember das yehudis, meaning normative modesty standards require that she cover more of her hair than just the basket in the marketplace. Ve'ela b'chatzer. Perhaps we're saying that in the chutzar, in the courtyard. Now, we'll say that what that sounds like is what? That she's obligated to cover her hair even at home. The Gemara says, Im kein lo hinachta bas la'avram avinu shir sheves tachas baila. But I will say, many women don't cover their hair on. I will say, again, we'll get into this discussion also. Let's assume that a woman is covering her hair on the outside. What is she obligated to do in her home? So that we'll get into. The Gemara seems to say that a woman would not be obligated to cover her hair within her own home. Because if that's the case, and if you say that not covering your hair in your house is violation of Das Yehudis, and therefore, again, Lemaisa is grounds for dissolution of the marriage with Adik Suva, Im kein lo nachta basti arum avinu sheyoshev estachas baila. No woman is going to be able to remain married because no woman keeps her hair covered constantly within her home. Amar Abayis, therefore says Abayi v'itim Rav Kahana, mechatzer lechatzer v'derech mavai. Oh no, what are we talking about over here? Where she's traveling from one chatzer to another chatzer by way of an alleyway. Now, we'll say now, the assumption is the mavoi, the alleyway, is ultimately Rashi says the lo shchichi rabim. There are not many people that are found there. There are very few people in the alleyway. Therefore, the maisa, again, it's okay if she only travels that by with the kalsa, with the basket on her head. So we'll say, so this is the next category now. So now we've seen that although hair covering is das moshe, is biblically mandated, is a chiyuv d'oraisa, the das yehudis component dictates how much hair will have to be covered. Which Rabbi says is also interesting, because what that then tells us is, once something is under the category of das yehudis, normative tznia standards, so it is possible that that standard could change depending on societal norms. So it's in, bless you. So the biblical obligation to cover hair absolutely never changes. Bless you. How much hair a woman may be required to cover could potentially change depending on societal circumstances. Says the Gemara of Tava B'Shuk, another example of violation of Das Yehudis, of normative tznius standards, is if she weaves her hair, not she weaves her hair, she weaves in the shuk, in the marketplace. Amrav Yudar Mishmo, what's the case? Bemara zra'osel ibn Adam. Well, so again, if she's weaving, she's working the loom, she allows her arms to become exposed, her upper arms, to become exposed to other men. So we'll say, allowing her upper arm, meaning referring to now above the elbow, allowing the arm above the elbow to become exposed, ultimately says the Gemara, is a lack of fundamental lack of tznius, and therefore is a violation of das yehudis. Rav Chista Amra Avimi Bitava Vareid Kineget Panaha. Vareid Kineget Panaha. No, where she's essentially weaving in a way, Rabbi Say, where her legs are spread apart, covered, but her legs are spread apart, and the thread is right between her legs. So what that does is it brings attention to the makom erva, and therefore is considered to be a lack of tznius. Umedaberesim kol adam, or she speaks with all men. These are all, remember, considered to be lack of tsanua, lack of, these are what they're considered to be a violation of das yehudis, which is a lack of normative modest conduct. So Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, b'mesacheches in bachurim, it's talking about where she flirts with younger men. Amar Rabbi Bar Bachana, zimna chadava ka'azilna basra d'Rav Ukva. So Rabbi Bar Bachana says, one time I was walking behind Rav Ukva, chazisi lahu aravyo, daviyasa kashaja pilcha v'tava v'rad k'neged panel. So there was a certain Arab woman in the marketplace who was weaving in a very immodest fashion, meaning her legs were spread apart, covered, but spread apart, and she was weaving, and the thread was right opposite the makom erva. And what happens? Kevan dechaza sinhan, when she saw us coming, pasikte lepilcha, shadise, she broke off the thread from the spindle, she threw the spindle onto the side. Amrali, she said to me, ulam, young man, hav li plach, go and get me my spindle. So both sides, she was trying to engage Rabbi Bar Bar Chana in conversation by creating a pretext. So she broke off the thread from the spindle, threw it to the side. Oh, young man, would you mind fetching that for me? Amar bar Rav Ukva Milsa. So Rav Ukva said something about this woman. My Amar Ba, what did he say about her? Ravina Amar Tava Bishuk Amar Ba. So Ravina said that Rav Ukva said, oh, this woman is the Mishnah's example of the woman who is immodest while weaving in the marketplace. Rabbanan Amri Rabbanan say that she is the example of Medaberes Imkol Adam Amarba, that this is the example of a woman who flirts with other men. Abashal Omar Afa Mikaleles Yoladov. So Arabar Shal says that what if a wife curses her husband's parents in front of him, that this is grounds for divorce without a ksuva. Amar Avihud Amar Shmuel, b'mekaleles yoldav b'fnei moldav, where ultimately she curses. I'm about to say, now this is not just saying where, you know, I can't stand your mother, right? This is where literally she's cursing his parents in his presence. V'simanech, how do we know that this is important? And Ephraim Unashe Kiruven Mishimon Yuli, that the Rebbe say ultimately again that, now I'm sorry, let me actually clarify that. B'mekaleles Yoldav Bifnei Moldav. This is where she curses his parents, in front of their children. So Rebbe says, not just that she talks ill of his parents, them to the husband, but she talks ill of his parents in front of their children. I mean, she talks ill of the grandparents in front of the grandchildren. V'simon, how do we know that you should not talk ill of grandparents in front of children? Ephraim Umanasha Kiruvain Vishimon Yihiuli. So we'll say when Yaakov Inu says that Ephraim and Asher are like Ruvain and Shimon. Now what does that teach us? That teaches us that Lemaisa, again, grandchildren have a relationship with grandparents almost like parents. Therefore you can't speak disparagingly about grandparents in the presence of grandchildren.
Even grandchildren.
It's even grandchildren, meaning
it's
she, in front of him also.
If she can't come in front of him, of course. But it's even she can't do it in front of grandchildren. Amar Rabba da Amrale, so an example of a curse. Nechlo Ari Lasaba Ba'ape Prey. So the example would be if a wife says, I hope a lion eats your grandfather. That's a good example of not liking your in-laws. So the idea is if she goes then and she says essentially to in front of her children, I hope some misfortune, I hope a lion eats your grandparents, then Lemaisa, again, that's an example of ultimately cursing the parents. So Rabbi Tarfon Omer Afa Kolonis. Rabbi Tarfon says that this is true, even a woman who's very loud. So Mara says, my Kolonis, Amr Yehuda Amr Shmuel, B'mashma'as Kolal Iske Tashmish, where Abba say, when the couple argue about matters of intimacy, so she goes ahead and she's very loud. Rashes al iske tashmish, kim shemedaber imal iske ona meriva imo. When they're having fights about intimacy, so what happens? She becomes very loud. Umashmas l'shchinov v'ubosh badavar. And obviously, it's very embarrassing about the husband. Tana, so the Gemara, I'm sorry, b'masnisa tana, b'mishameshes b'chatzer zu, v'nishma kola b'chatzer acheres. Or Rabbi Osai, it could also be, Rashi says, where a woman for whom relations is very painful, and therefore when she has relations, she cries out in pain, and she cries out so loud that she could be heard in the next chatzer. We'll say, obviously, something like this is exceptionally embarrassing for the husband, and therefore, again, would be grounds for ultimately dissolution of the marriage. The Gemara says, I don't understand. So we'll say, so why don't we go ahead, and that should be in a different category, because we're going to see in the next Mishnah that if a man marries a woman on the condition that she doesn't have any mumin, any kind of defects, blemishes, and it turns out that she does, that that's a mekachtos, and you could dissolve the marriage. If a woman is unable to engage in relations because it's simply too painful for her to the point that she cries out, and she could be heard in the next chatzer, that's a mum, and that could be grounds for dissolution of the marriage. Ella mechavarta kiddushanin amekar. Rather, it's clear, as we said originally, that kolonis is a woman who argues with her husband, specifically regarding matters of intimacy, in a very loud voice that can be heard in the next chatzer. It's obviously very embarrassing for the husband, and therefore, again, would be grounds for divorce. Says the Mishnah, HaMekadish es ha'isha amanashin alei nedarim. If a man is mekadish woman on the condition that she has made no nedarim, meaning a man says, I don't want to marry any woman with any neder baggage, so I'm being mekadish you on the condition that you have not made any nedarim. V'nimtsu alei nedarim, and it turns out that she had made nedarim, Eina mikudeshes, the kiddushin is not good. Similarly, kinsa stam. Let's say a man marries a woman stam without any preconditions, and then what happens? Venimtsu aleha nedarim, and it turns out that she has made nedarim. What's the halacha? Teitzei shelo b'ksuva. Rabbi said that is also considered to be a mekachtos. So this is true even if he did not make a condition. He married her, and then it found out that she made a neder. Whatever. Well, we'll discuss what kind of nedarim. But she made some type of neder that impacts the marriage. He has the ability to claim mekachtos, and she leaves the marriage without a ksuva. Amanas she'in b'mumin. If a man has mekadesh woman on the condition that she doesn't have any blemishes, v'nimtzu b'mumin, and it turns out she does have blemishes. Obviously, we'll have to define what constitutes a blemish in these circumstances. Eina mikudeshes, the kiddushin is not good. B'kansa stam, v'nimtzu b'mumin. If he marries her stam without any qualifications, and then it turns out that she has blemishes, teitzei shelo b'ksuva. She, in fact, it's a mekachtos, and therefore she leaves the marriage without a ksuva. Call what kind of mum disqualifies? Kala mumin apostlin, b'kohanim apostlin menashim. I will say any mum that would invalidate a kohen from doing the avoda would constitute a mum for marital purposes as well. So I will say, let's just do two lines and then we're going to stop. Utnan nami gabi kiddushin, and we learn this regarding kiddushin as well. Kiyai gavna. So we'll say, so remember, what the Gemara is asking over here is this, essentially this exact halacha is stated by kiddushin as well. So if it was stated by kiddushin, why does it have to be restated over here? Hacha ksuvus itzrichale, tana kiddushin atu ksuvus. So we'll say over here, where the primary discussion is regarding ksuvus, so the Gemara just brought in kiddushin kind of agav orche, just in passing. Hasam kiddushin itzrichale, tana ksuvus atu kiddushin. But Rabbi say over there, But over there, where the Mishnah is primarily talking about Kiddushin, therefore, again, the Gemara just brings up a discussion of Ksuvis Atu Kiddushin. So essentially, again, what the Gemara is saying is, in Kiddushin, the primary discussion was Lagabe Kiddushin, but once we're discussing Kiddushin, we're brought up Ksuvis. Here, the Iker discussion is by Ksuvis, and once we're discussing Ksuvis, we also brought up Kiddushin. Right? So we're going to stop over here for today. We will, Amir Tzashem, pick up with Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Yotzadak, Amir Tzashem, tomorrow.